Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Last call!
Not so fast, bartender. I think I'll have one more.
Time for one more round of sports talk.
That's what I'm talking about! Sports!
It's Last Call with Joe George.
Thanks, Joe!
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Another!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe George.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Last Call here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George and AJ here with you for the next hour. We got lots to get to on today's show. We're talking Astros. We're talking the circle of trust for the Houston Texans, players-only meetings. We're going to talk some college football as well. Big news today out of the SEC. And then we'll eventually be the ACC with their schedule, which I think is really important because it's going to shape the way we look at the college football playoff, I think, pretty easily. And also a reminder not to judge too quickly for in college football today regarding Pat Fitzgerald. We'll wrap the show up with stupid rules because the NFL this year says they care about sportsmanship. And we're going to get into that at the end of the show as well. You guys are welcome in, 713-780-3776 here on YouTube as well and twitch.tv/ESPN975. I can't say in full details just yet, but just a heads up, I would highly recommend being listening to the radio station tomorrow morning in the 9 o'clock hour. There will be a very special guest joining Lance and Will Kunkel tomorrow. But, AJ, let's get into it. Let's talk some Houston Astros. So, it's been bad. That's probably the nicest way to put it, is things have not been going well. Jesus Sanchez can't hit a baseball. Frankly, anyone besides Carlos Correa can't hit the baseball right now. Right. And Framber Valdez has been struggling. He's given up 21 runs over his last four starts. Had given up seven, I think it's seven total in his previous seven before that. So a lot's just going wrong for this team. Thanks to the baseball gods, they're still in first place in their division somehow, because while the Astros aren't playing well, the Mariners aren't playing any better. So like that's the only really positive thing that you can look at the last two series here, where the Astros have lost two out of three to the Orioles, and they've lost three straight to the Detroit Tigers. They've had to do something that I find despicable. That might be harsh, honestly. I hate having to watch position players pitch in baseball. I think it sucks. It's just waving the white flag. I get why they do it. Like, logically, it does make sense, but this is I know people don't like this take that I've had before, but honestly, I'd rather just like call the game at that point. Like, if you're going to be rolling out guys that don't belong on the mound out there for the Houston Astros. So it's all been bad. The encouraging news is that Yordan Alvarez is scheduled to play in another minor league game tonight. Now, I say scheduled because it does look like from the people that are there in Corpus that there's some rain coming, and maybe the game will not get in tonight. So I don't know how that will affect the Houston Astros and what their planning is for Yordan Alvarez for when his return could be to this team. I don't think it should change anything. This isn't a thought on the current state of the Astros in terms of panicking, but I really don't get the whole point of Yordan Alvarez going on a rehab assignment. Like, he could do exactly what he's doing in the minors with the Astros right now. He could have played yesterday, had today off, play these next two games back-to-back, and then go from there. And I guess it's more about, you know, roster management is probably the reason why you don't handle it that way, just in case Yordan Alvarez plays, you know, three games and is unable to continue so far this season. But if you just hope for the best of luck, it's like, well, he could just be up right now. So that's the good with what's happening, is that Yordan's almost back, and the Mariners keep losing. Besides that, it's pretty much all bad right now outside of Carlos Correa. And it's one of those where it's just the worst time of the year, honestly, to see your entire team slumping at one point. And they had a team meeting. AJ, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on team meetings?
I think it's really an overrated type of concept, honestly. Because, I mean, you saw they had the meeting on Tuesday and still got blown out yesterday. So, I mean, it obviously didn't make too much of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, the Houston Texans had one, had Jets three game? Within like a week last year, I think it was. Like, they had one before a game, they had one after the game, then they had another one. So there's three team meetings. And at no point did the offense all of a sudden look better.
Right.
Most of the time, team meetings, to me, are a sign of... it's just the players acknowledging what's happening. And Carlos Correa talked about this yesterday after the game, that they just got simply outplayed by the Detroit Tigers in this three-game series. So it's not like they're not aware, but a team meeting does not give me confidence that they're just going to like wake up in Baltimore today and all of a sudden start playing good baseball again. Like, it just doesn't do it for me in that way. So the real question now for the Astros is just, how do you get back on track outside of hoping that Yordan Alvarez is the one that really just sparks the Houston Astros? The couple of things I think the Astros can do. To be honest with you, with Cam Smith, I'm not really sure how much for him it benefits to stay in the big league roster at this point. I don't think they'll send him down, but I think there's a real argument to let him go down to the minors, get his swing back together, then come back up to the majors to try to contribute to this team in a positive manner the rest of the season. He's really the only guy that you have that option with. So it's the one player that I would take advantage of that opportunity as the Astros. I would send him down, let him get right, and then try to bring him back up to the majors, figure out whatever's going wrong with his swing, or if a book has been written on him and he just needs to figure out how to counteract these pitchers on a consistent basis. Like, that's fine. Because when you talk about the benefit of the doubt, Peña gets it, Altuve gets it, your core guys, they get the benefit of the doubt. But Cam Smith, unfortunately, because he's a rookie, it's hard to say he deserves the benefit of the doubt right now with the way he's playing. And the same goes for Jesus Sanchez. That trade is fine. It's not like you didn't give up anything, but it's been a disappointment, like, with the way he's been playing. And it's not all those two guys' faults that the Astros went 34 straight innings, or what, like 34 and two-thirds, whatever it was, straight innings without scoring. But it's just, it feels bleak. And it should feel worse, but again, the Mariners have just gifted you the chance to stay in front in your division. And Jeremy and I, we have our Inside the Icebox podcast dropping tomorrow on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. But one of the things that we discussed, and we can discuss now a little bit, is while the Mariners have given you a break, if you look at where the Astros stand right now going into this series against the Baltimore Orioles, they are 4.5 games back of the Toronto Blue Jays for the number 2 seed in the American League. But at the same time, they're only 3.5 games up as of this moment of the Kansas City Royals, who are the last team outside the playoffs right now in terms of the wild card. So while the division does hang in the balance right now, the way the Astros are playing has allowed the Royals to creep up enough in the wild card race where if the Mariners do pass you, there to me is legitimate concern about where this Astros season could head. And fully healthy, I still think this team is a World Series caliber team this season, but It's just, it's going so poorly at one time that I've used this word a bunch. It just feels like it's just teetering on which direction it's going to go.
Right. It's like they're in an insurmountable slump right now. They can't get out of it. Yeah.
And we see teams go through this. Like the Yankees were going through this not that long ago. Mm-hmm. The Cubs have been going through this for like a month and a half now. But like, there are teams that are struggling. The Boston Red Sox went through it a lot of this season. The Mariners are going through it right now. Yeah. Like, we see teams are collectively going in these giant slumps this year, which is pretty common. But the Astros is just happening at a time in which everything is starting to tighten up. You've got like 35 games left to go, I think it is, in the season. And it's just it feeling uneasy with what's happening around you in the standings. 713-780-3776 is your way into the show, as well on YouTube and Twitch. And Keith is on the phone lines. Keith, what's going on?
Hey, Joe, quick question. I've said it on every radio show on the station the past few weeks. I would have absolutely have made that Dylan Cease trade for Arrigetti and two prospects, call them, you know, maybe Leon and Salazar. But Arrigetti, you know, 3-4 starts back, has looked, you know, average to below average. Dylan Cease is a certified stud. You could pitch him game 1, 2, or 3 in any series. I would have made that trade, especially with seeing Fromber struggles. And then, you know, you don't have Lance, and then, you know, Javier's now out. Arrigetti's looked bad. You know, Brown's Hunter Brown's a lock in as your game 1 or 2. But like, imagine if you get Fromber right and you go Cease, Brown, and Fromber. I would have made that deal with all due respect to Arrigetti and a couple of prospects, because you basically got Correa for free. You know?
Yeah, I think too. I think in hindsight, I mean, I'm with you, Keith. Like, I liked the idea of the Dylan Cease, like, as the deadline was winding down and that was being reported, the Astros were still heavily involved in conversations with Dylan Cease. I do think there's an argument for it. The argument against it is obviously is the control of Spencer Arrigetti, that the Astros believe in what he's going to be in the future. And to give them the benefit of the doubt in the long run, the Astros develop pitching better than any organization in all of Major League Baseball. So if someone's going to get the best out of Spencer Arrigetti, it is this team. But in this moment, with the way Fromber's pitching, which again is only really a 4-game stretch, he's been excellent for most of the season. You do think that having Cease as that third guy, I'm with you there, where it gives you a lot more confidence. The other argument against this, you're going to be in a wild card series. Like, your third pitcher shouldn't have to pitch. And, you know, you should win game 1 and game 2 of Fromber and Hunter starting a playoff series. Last year, you lost it, and you went home, and Kikuchi never saw them out. So depending on what prospects they were asking for, if it was that level of prospects, I think it would have been a mistake not to make the deal. I don't think that's the kind of prospects the Padres were asking for. They were asking, I think, for more, especially an organization that at the deadline this year unloaded its farm system across Major League Baseball to get better. I think they're probably looking for more like Bryce Matthews, this Iloilo kid, I think that's how you say it, who was really good yesterday in Sugarland. Probably more than the low-level guys that you think it was. But in hindsight, yeah, like in this moment, it feels like you would have needed that guy. I'm still a believer in Christian Javier this season. I've said it, you know, I said it last week. I'll say it again now. I think Christian Javier is the guy that I would want to and feel the most comfortable giving the ball to. Lance McCullers returns tomorrow night for the Houston Astros. We'll see how that goes. Not super confident that it's going to go great. Or even if it does, will it go great again? It's probably the bigger question with Lance McCullers. But at the end of the day, like as much as Dylan Cease would help you, to Keith's point, he doesn't score you runs. Like he doesn't fix the fact that the Astros haven't been able to score. He doesn't fix the problem that Josh Hader is, in my opinion, not going to pitch again this season. And if you do, it'll be very lucky that he's out there. It doesn't solve the Fromber Valdez problem. You're still having bad starts in this recent stretch from Fromber that have really amplified what the Astros are going to. Because to make the playoffs and to win the division and to try to chase down the Tigers and the Blue Jays, if any of that is obtainable, the Astros need to win virtually every single start that Fromber Valdez and Hunter Brown are out there for the rest of the season. Like, you, those are not must-win games, because I know must-win is really just like when you're, it's win or go home for you on the year. But there, to me, it feels like they're as close as it can get at this point in the season. All right. We'll take a break here. You guys are still welcome in. 713-780-3776. Your last chance, your last call to talk Houston sports here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 for the day. When we get back, DeMeco Ryans was asked today about trust, the relationship between C.J. Stroud and Nick Caley. We'll hear from DeMeco, and it got me thinking. Who's in the circle of trust for the Houston Texans going into the 2025-2026 season? We'll get to that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to Last Call with Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe George.
I don't know how this is going to make Astros fans feel here, okay? I just said Josh Hader. I don't think he's going to pitch again this year. So how does signing a 37-year-old relief pitcher who this year in one game has pitched in one game? That's Craig Kimbrell. Craig Kimbrell has signed with the Houston Astros per Jeff Passan. He's joining the big league team. So that is something. I don't know how to feel about that. I don't feel great, to be honest. I don't think he's coming here to be a great pitcher, but the last time Craig Kimbrell had a below 3.8 ERA on the season was 2022. So last year he pitched for the Orioles, had a 4.18 ERA the year before. He pitched for the Phillies, a 3.81 ERA. He did have, 23 saves last year and 23 the year before, 22 the year before that. So he's put up some okay numbers. I mean, it's been nothing like he had 2021 when he was with the Cubs, actually. He had a 1.1 ERA, I think it was, with the team. It's not great. I mean, I don't know. A 0.49 ERA with the Cubs before he was traded to the White Sox. And then it was a five ERA. I got these a little wrong. A 3.75 with the Dodgers, a 3.26 with the Phillies, and a 5.33 ERA with the Baltimore Orioles last year. Again, he's only pitching, it looks like, according to Baseball Reference, one game this season. So not to be anything to be thrilled about, I would say the least. I think Chris wants to talk about this. Chris, what's going on?
I hate the signing. I absolutely hate it. I've hated Craig Kimbrell since I've seen him pitch in the beginning. I cannot stand the stupid little stance he does, the little arms out and stuff. I cannot stand that man. I've hated him since day one. I do not want him here. Obviously, I have nothing to do with it. I hate that man. This is a horrible signing.
Thank you, Chris. Chris, I don't think you're going to be alone in that sign. It was so bad it made me choke. That's how bad that signing was. I guess this is where the Astros think their bullpen is at right now, that you're dipping into veteran water that you probably don't want to be. I mean, Ryan Pressly was a name that was thrown around quite a bit after he was DFA'd by the Cubs. I know amongst Astros fans, trying to think if he would be resurrected here in Houston. He wasn't good here last year. He was worse this year. So I'm not too surprised. I'm curious if the Astros think there's something there with Craig Kimbrell that can help them. I mean, again, they do deserve the benefit of the doubt most of the time with what they do with starting pitching or with pitchers. You see guys come in and have success, but Hector Neris was a flop for the second year in a row in this kind of move. They didn't go after Pressly. They couldn't fix Pressly last year. Like, at some point, guys are just washed. That's kind of where I feel like Craig Kimbrell is at this point. So that's one where this is a kind of cross your fingers, I guess, and hope for the best of what you're going to see for him. But again, it's probably more about a reflection of where Dana Brown thinks this roster is at, that you have to go out there and make a move like this. And we'll see. It's not inspiring. I do agree. I his little arm slot thing that he does is strange. I'm just looking at Ari Alexander's tweet. Michael Scott, no. The GIF being tweeted out is all over the place. WTF coming from Andrew on the Twitter. I don't know about this one. This doesn't feel like something that, again, is inspiring in any ways for the way the Houston Astros are playing. Maybe if they were playing better, we'd feel better about this move in the moment. We're like, but they've been reeling. So to add them to this, it's just not great. Not great, AJ. All right, let's talk some Houston Texans here, okay? One of the things about this season that's the most important is going to be the relationship between Nick Caley, the new offensive coordinator, and C.J. Stroud. Here is D'Amico Ryans today meeting with the media and talking about that relationship between these two guys.
Yeah, Caley and C.J., they continue to develop that trust. It's like any relationship, you have to – first, it's about the communication. Like staying in constant communication, that's what allows a relationship to flourish. And those guys are lock and step. They're communicating well one another. And that relationship will still blossom. Like we're still at the beginning stages of Caley and C.J. working together. But I think for where we are now, both guys done an outstanding job of just allowing us to be as best as we can possibly be and knowing that it's even brighter on the other side. I'm very encouraged with where they are in their relationship.
Well, sounds good. It's all the right coach speak stuff that you want to hear from D'Amico Ryans. I mean, I don't think anyone should have expected to hear anything differently there, to be honest with you, from D'Amico. But it got me thinking about the word trust there for the Houston Texans. Who do you trust this year? Whether it's a player, a position group, a coach, like what do you trust the most for this team and to have success that you can rely on week in and week out? I think the easy answer here is you can trust in the defense.
Right.
Like as a whole, you can trust in the defense. Specifically, you can trust in Derek Stingley Jr., Will Anderson, yep. Daniel Hunter. Like those are the three guys of the players on this roster, and Nico Collins being the fourth that, I mean, Nico's out there, that you can absolutely trust week in and week out when they're on the field. Right, AJ?
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
Like, I think about and the next group of players, like outside of those four, I mean, the defensive line as a whole is probably fair to say.
Yeah.
I don't think I would put the linebacker room in the circle of trust just yet. I really like Henry To'o. EJ Speed's shown some flashes mm-hmm. in preseason. It's preseason, though, and where he's looked really good. He does this. His last name seems worthy. He's all over the place. The reason why I can't put Aziz there is I know he didn't hit Bryce Young in the head, but in the preseason game, like that doesn't seem encouraging to me.
Right, after the Trevor Lawrence stuff last year, too. Yeah.
Yeah, like can you trust him to not do the same thing this year? And like while I don't like the rules in which it's called because the quarterback is a runner. A runner should not slide like that. I think you should dive. I think you should be required to dive forward because yeah. It protects yourself as the runner. You're not going to have the, you know, head-on collision that Trevor Lawrence had last year, smacking your head against the field the way he did. You're a runner, again. Like, running backs and receivers don't slide like that.
Right, it's free game.
It's free game, right? So, yeah. Like, I don't agree with it, what happened last year. I think it was probably deserved still because of Aziz's track record. Like, realistically, I mean, he's out there punching guys left and right. Like, like he toes the line, if not crosses it, between like a dirty player. But that's why I can't put them in the circle of trust, just because I can't trust that he's going to be out there. Right. I'm not going to hold injuries against guys either.
And he's not aware sometimes, too, of that. I mean, obviously, you already have that target, too, so you got to be more cognizant of what he's doing.
I mean, the first time Aziz does something like that right. This year, he's going to get suspended.
Exactly.
Like he is going to have a target on his back as a dirty player in the NFL. Whether that's right or wrong, he has played in a style in which he has got a big old target on his back by league officials. I mean, the Houston Texans were one of the most fined teams in the NFL last year. Aziz is a huge part of that reasoning for those fines. So I can't include the linebacker room. The safety room, the other parts of the secondary, definitely trust Lassiter along with Stingley. I will be curious what year two looks like for Lassiter because year one was awesome right away for him. Like, the Texans could arguably have the best cornerback tandem in the NFL by the end of the season. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But you don't know who the third guy is. Like, who's the third corner? And then because of the C.J. Gardner-Johnson injury, Kalen Bullock is still, like, I think he could lead the league in interceptions with for what sure. he's going to be able to do. But this Jimmy Ward thing is not great. I know D'Amico talked at length today about don't rush decisions or to assumptions here. You know, wait to see how the legal process plays out. Like a civil lawsuit's now pending or now in the process for Jimmy Ward. So I don't think I can fully trust the safety room. Like I have trust in it, but not in the trust I have on the other spots on defense, right?
That's yeah, fair? For sure. Absolutely.
Where are you at offensively, AJ? Who do you trust?
Nico? I think Nico. Yeah, for sure. Like you said, absolutely Nico. But everyone else, though, I mean, there's still a level of trust in CJ, though. You just want to see him perform better from last season. But, I mean, there's a combination of things of why he didn't play with offensive line. Then, what's called, Bobby Slow didn't evolve as a play caller. So, mm-hmm. you know.
I think that CJ is, I still trust him.
Right.
I don't think CJ played poor enough last year because of what was happening around him to where you don't want to trust him. Like, you want to see, you know, more.
Right.
I think we want to be more comp. Like CJ, like, you know, like the Killer Bees are their top 10 quarterback rankings and CJ came in 10th. I think that's very fair.
Yeah.
Because the guys behind him, there's a lot of questions. Like Justin Herbert, I think what happened in the playoffs last year is the reason why they and others put him behind CJ Stroud. But the guys who are 1 through 9 in front of CJ, there's way less questions. Like CJ's right in that perfect area between like 10 and 13 in terms of where his ranking is at in terms of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And he just needs to get, he doesn't have to be perfect like he basically was his rookie year. I think that's way too much to expect.
Yeah.
And frankly, I want to see, it always sounds weird, but like I want to see interceptions be thrown by CJ Stroud. I want to see him being able to feel comfortable trying to put the ball in tight situations. But if Nico's healthy and then you have Christian Kirk and Xavier Hutchinson, who's having a great camp apparently, and you have Higgins, Noel, and all these different guys, these rookies you've brought in, you have a core group of players along with a solid and okay, probably is the best way to put it, tight end position group. Yeah. Like you should have a much better year.
Yeah, so, for sure.
And then honestly, that's it for the offense. Like there's no trust in Nick Caley. Like no one knows what to expect from this mm-hmm. guy. Like we've seen positive things in camp, but like it's always like inner squad was a little weird today. They were practicing against the Lions. There's not a lot of video out there. The Lions started their NFL protocols, which means the media can't film at practice. So all you have is team footage that was put out there and then fan footage that was there. So there's not much to really glean, I think, from that besides what was written and tweeted about. But depending on who you read, that's why inner squad's weird too, because depending on like just like whose prerogative it is,
right,
the Texans had a good day and also had a very bad day at the same time.
Right. And that's all you hear from the joint practices when you can't film as well too, so you don't know what to believe or take from it.
Even from the teams, like the Detroit yeah. Lions tweeted out this clip about locking down Nico Collins. Mm. And Nico's in the air and the cornerback is like bear hugging him around the waist.
It's PI.
And like it's pass interference. But they're tweeting about it like it's like the greatest play they've ever seen. And it's just like, well, that's not really like that would have been a flag.
Right.
And like in a game. So, all right. So if you missed the news, Craig Kimbrell has signed with the Houston Astros. He is on his way to Baltimore, it seems, to join the team. And the man who had a perfect game into the 7th inning against the Astros also just gave up a 2-run home run to Christian Walker. I'm sure Jeremy Branham's not listening to the show, but shame on Jeremy. He's tweeting and driving right now. It's very obvious. He lives far from here. There's no way he's home already. It's 6:28. He's not home. He's tweeting and driving. Shame on you, Jeremy. I expect better from you. That's just because he forgot to promote my show at the end of his. So
true.
I got to call him out for it.
He asked afterwards what was after.
It's every
call.
Thursday and yeah. Friday. Monday, yeah. Thursday, Friday. Like, it's not hard. Like, come on, man. Get your head out of the gutter. But sorry, Paul forgot to call me today. All host meeting. I didn't get a true. Phone call.
Yeah.
Sorry, Paul. That's my guy. All right, when we get back, let's talk some college football. Big news coming out of the SEC that sounds like will have a trickle-down effect to the ACC. It will have college football playoff implications. It's about damn time. The SEC is getting on board with what the Big Ten is doing, and the ACC will be joining them. We'll get to all of that next year on Last Call on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This is Last Call with Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe George.
All right, Craig Kimbrell signed with the Astros. J.P. France was reinstated from a 60-day injured list and optioned to AAA. Lance McCullers will be back tomorrow. And the Houston Texans have one preseason game left to go. I think I said this earlier in the week, AJ. I hate that there's an off week. This sucks. It's such a tease. Like, why do they need a bye week? Like, what do we need a bye?
Already been waiting for almost 7 months.
Yeah. Just play. Just play the following week. Like, it's not necessary. Like, you don't need all this time off.
And they can't make the college football excuses. I mean, college football is already on when they're in a season. So
no, that's the good stuff.
Right.
I mean, college football's got a banger coming out
for sure.
That first week while there's no NFL. I mean, there are some incredible games that first weekend of college football. I mean, I guess not for sure yet, but like, I'm very disappointed our first triple of Burge this year is not going to be that weekend. But you got Texas, Ohio State at 11 o'clock. Lee Corso's last game. So that'll be fun to see. You've got, well, let's see, it ends with Notre Dame and Miami. So me versus Dell that weekend. You've got Clemson, LSU, which honestly, like, that might be the game I'm most interested in.
Yeah, very intriguing.
Like, well, Miami, Notre Dame is, I mean, I guess all three of them are awesome. Yeah. Like, you have a new quarterback at Ohio State with new offensive coordinators, new defensive coordinators versus Arch Manning at Texas and a team that did lose a ton of talent in the draft. Both Texas and Ohio State did. Ohio State's a 2-point favorite at home in this one. The over-under is 47.5. I definitely don't bet on college football unless I'm at a sports book until a little bit later in the season, just because I want to see how it all plays out. Because, like, who knows? This kid for Ohio State could be awesome.
Yeah.
He could be better than Arch Manning, and no one really knows it. Clemson is a 4-point favorite at home against LSU. If I was going to bet on one of these games, this is the one I would, because at least you have Nussmeier and Klubnik both playing. Number 4 versus number 9. And this one, that one's going to be, Brian Kelly loses it every year.
Yeah,
pretty much. Week of the season.
Lost 3 in a row.
I think LSU has lost 5 in a row going back to Ed Orgeron, their first game of the season.
I believe so.
And like, they can make up that ground playing in that conference, but like, I think LSU and Clemson are both legit title contenders
for sure
this year. I mean, that's why, like, when you look at college football this season, if I was going to like bet on teams that I feel confident in right now, it's just because of quarterbacks. I would look at Clemson, LSU, and Penn State, because those three teams are all returning their starting quarterbacks. Like, while Arch has played, he's not a returning starter. And you look at the rest of the top 10. Texas has a new quarterback. Ohio State has a new quarterback. Georgia has a new quarterback. Notre Dame has a new quarterback. Oregon has a new quarterback. Alabama, Miami. Like, they all have new quarterbacks. Yeah. Like, that's why Arizona State at 11 is interesting, because they keep their QB. Illinois is fascinating to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this 11? Year. Like, they're, let's see, AP top 25 and coaches poll at 12.
12.
So, I can't believe, like, I, pretty much everyone I know, like, roots for Notre Dame, unless you go to U of I or you go to Northwestern or you root for someone else.
Mm.
Like, to me, like, growing up in Chicago, like especially when I was like living downtown, I thought there was more Iowa bars downtown. Like, in Chicago, like, there's college bars for each team. It's awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, there's some out here for like LSU and like you have your A&M and stuff. Right. Like, but there are Big Ten and like SEC bars for every single team. So like, you can go to a Georgia bar, you walk in, like, every Georgia fan that basically lives in Chicago is there. It's awesome. It's kind of like the Maple Leaf Pub here in Houston, which I think still exists, where like, it's like the only place to go and watch hockey, basically. That's what these college bars are like. And like, they're normal, like, at night, it's just like a normal like sports bar, but during the day, like, you go in for an Iowa 11 o'clock game and there's just black and yellow all over the place. It's so cool. Even if you're not a fan, like, if there's a big game, like, I would try to sneak in.
Just to go watch.
Just to go watch and be in that environment. So thankfully we have those games that will be happening. And thankfully, one of the big things that's been happening with the college football playoff expansion is like, the Big Ten has been pushing back against some of the things that the SEC has been asking for. And the thing that they've been pointing to is the 8 conference games versus the 9 conference games. The Big Ten plays 9, the ACC plays 8, the SEC plays 8. That officially is over for the SEC. Starting in 2026, the SEC will play nine conference games, and they will continue their rule of having to play one game against someone from the Big 12, ACC, Big 10, or Notre Dame. That's already a rule. I think people misconstrued some tweets that were put out there, but like that's already a thing that's in place this year. Someone just said the Maple Leaf is closed. That makes me sad. It's been a long time since the Blackhawks have been in the playoffs, so I used to go there when I first moved to Houston. But that bumps me out. So the SEC is going to catch up. And then the ACC, their president said earlier this year at ACC Media Days that essentially if the SEC went to nine, that they would go to nine. So now we're starting to see all these conferences start to get on the same page, which it's about time. Everyone, it's not perfect to create a uniform sport in college football anymore with the way things have changed, but you can still create some semblance of that. And that's, I think it starts here with just equal scheduling. And I think that this should be, this rule should apply, that the SEC has, should apply to everyone. Now, I would like them to further that. I would like them to not play these cupcake teams.
Right.
You know, you can play a lower level group of six team. Like, I think that's fine. Like, if you want to schedule, you know, Nevada, or I know Boise State was good last year, or Boise State, or one of these teams, like that's fine. But like these directional teams that teams are playing, like that to me is the next step. Get to nine games, make everyone play one out of conference game. That's against another good conference, even if that's a lower team, because that's always a crapshoot. Like, you never know what you're going to get when you schedule those teams, and then go from there. Because as much as we get like the, you know, Notre Dame and Texas are going to start playing a home and home in, I think it's like 2030. It's forever away, so plenty of time for it to get canceled, and it probably will. Because of the way that college football is changing. But like, then you have like Indiana football is out here creating home and homes with like Indiana, like Indiana State, because they want to do the SEC scheduling philosophy where they play these non power conference opponents who are just a total joke. So I think this is a good day for college football, like just to try to be getting this thing in the right direction, just to try to see if you can. As you come up with a new college football playoff format, I've said this before when we talked about the Big Ten on Monday, talking about going to 24 or 28 teams. I don't think we really need expansion to come into place in the playoffs. I'd like to see them work out, you know, a 12-year period, or I mean a 12-team period for like at least 2 years, or really I'd prefer like five before they change this thing, but like at least like get like 2 or 3 years of this thing before it goes away. The other thing that I think this is interesting, like, and maybe it's just me, I know I have some Illinois bias here in this story, but I watched a coach who Pat Fitzgerald at times, when I was around him in college, I would see him kind of be a D-bag, to be honest with you, towards college reporters. He would treat these 18-year-olds like he was Bill Belichick. But for the most part, Pat Fitzgerald was like a really good coach. And he got fired for being part of this giant hazing scandal at Northwestern. And it's funny looking at now some of the tweets with what we are going to know, what we know today and what we're going to get to in a second. But like after Pat was fired, a bunch of the coaches wore like Northwestern versus the World shirts with the number 51 on the back of it. And people were like, cancel Northwestern. They don't belong. Well, today, Northwestern and Pat Fitzgerald had to settle their lawsuit because there was zero proof that Pat Fitzgerald was aware of any hazing, that no student athlete ever went to him in regards to the hazing. And he had nothing to do with what happened at Northwestern. He will be back in college football next year. And now that he will not be at a program as limited as Northwestern, whatever program he goes to, I will be all in on.
Yeah.
Because he took Northwestern to heights that they did not belong to. And he was loyal because he was a great player for that team. I mean, this is a guy who interviewed to be the head coach of the Bears, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, like could have had real jobs. Instead, a thorough investigation was not done into him, and college football once again got something wrong. We talked about the Michigan scandal on Monday, how like they did all these show cause penalties and big fines for Michigan, and are suspending Sherrone Moore for a game next year against Western Michigan in Germany. They always get it wrong. And this one, Northwestern, the school itself, got it wrong, and probably should have given someone that meant as much to that program the benefit of the doubt. So I now think he's going to be he's the number two candidate in college football already for coaching jobs. Number one's Nick Saban.
Of course, yeah.
Just because of what Greg McElroy said, that like maybe Nick Saban's going to come out of retirement. I don't believe it for an instant.
Nah.
But Pat Fitzgerald, like, I'm really curious about like where he lands next season. Assuming he wants to get back into it, and I'm assuming he will. A school I just mentioned, LSU, like Brian Kelly, like would you do something like that? Maybe. But like I wonder what direction he will go in his career now that he can get back on the sidelines. At some point, the Florida job would be really interesting because that feels like that's going to open this year, especially with all the injuries they've already had. Like, I would love to see Pat Fitzgerald behind a program that doesn't have the academic standards that Northwestern has, and also like supports its athletic program in a way that like Northwestern is incapable of frankly doing. All right, we'll take our final break here. When we get back, a new stupid rule is being implemented in the NFL. Not exactly clear on what it is, but we'll hear from someone from the NFL, and we'll talk about the rules we hate the most in sports. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's Last Call on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe George.
All right, from the 315, adding a ninth SEC game makes it less balanced. If anything, they would already have to play the toughest schedule as it is. Big Ten just wants the better conference to beat up on each other more than they already do. I get your point, but the Big Ten's biggest contention with the college football playoff format that they've been suggesting is that both the SEC and the Big Ten get the same amount of automatic qualifiers, which I think has been around four. So it's been four for the Big Ten, four for the SEC. Two for the Big 12, two for the ACC. So that's 12 teams, a group of five, and then I think three automatic qualifier or three of the next three teams. So the cream will rise to the top of that situation. Like the top four SEC teams will make the playoff in a 16 team format. So it shouldn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. I do think it is fair to say like, to have the same amount of automatic qualifiers, everyone should play the same amount of games against their conference. Maybe it does make it the SEC eats it each other a little bit by doing that, or it's more likely. Because the Big Ten's obviously still very top-heavy. Like the Big Ten prides itself on winning the last two national championships, and you have to give them credit for that. But if you do look top to bottom, the SEC is obviously still the far superior conference at this point. I don't think that's really arguable. At this point, the Big Ten has just had the best two teams in the country the last 2 years. But I think it's fair to say, like, if we're going to be going to a college football playoff that's expanded to 16 teams, and each of these two conferences are going to each automatically get a total of eight teams, asking everyone to play the same amount of conference games is fair. I do think the best thing that they could do, and I know there was this fake partnership that once existed between like the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the ACC, where it was like, we're not going to poach teams. And then the Big Ten went like poached a bunch of teams anyways. Like I do think it would be in the best interest of college football if these teams, these conferences united, and the one game you played was some kind of a rotator, where it's like the SEC and the Big Ten are going to play a game at random every year, kind of like how the NFL playoff, like the NFL schedule goes. Like, it doesn't have to be the best team in the Big Ten plays the best team in the SEC the next year. I would be fine if it was the best team in the SEC played the worst team in the Big Ten. But you got to get conferences with the same amount of teams. All that's complicated. The ACC commissioner, too, brought up the point that when they go to 9, it will jeopardize some of these rivalry games that exist outside of the conference. I disagree. I've always disagreed with that. It's like I disagreed with the A&M and UT argument that it couldn't happen. It's stupid. It should be happening. Just because you're in different conferences doesn't mean you can't play. Florida State and Florida play every single year. Clemson and South Carolina, they play every single year. That doesn't have to change just because you're in new conferences. Like, if you want to play a rivalry game, like if Michigan, Ohio State ever ended up in different conferences somehow, that game could still happen every single year. Like, there is nothing besides ego that is stopping that from happening. Because that's really what it was. Is, I don't know whose ego was hurt worse by A&M going to the SEC or whatever was going on there. Both sides always kind of pointed the finger at each other. If you ask an A&M fan, it was UT's fault. If you ask a UT fan, it was A&M's fault. Like, why those games never happened. But, like, they could have happened. And there's really, there's no argument why they shouldn't have been. So, this should be an awesome college football season. We'll save the stupid rules things for tomorrow's show. Just because we only got about 2 minutes left here to go. But this college football season, I think it's as wide open as college football has ever been. Just because the amount of returning quarterbacks that are back. Clemson had to squeak into the playoffs last year. I don't think anyone's really a believer in Drew Aller, even though I said that these are the teams I would look at because they have returning quarterbacks. Like, there's not a lot of faith in Clemson because they don't use the transfer portal. There's not a lot of faith in Penn State because it's James Franklin. I think a lot of people are really one way or the other with Arch Manning. You're either all in or you're wanting to call him a fraud before he even touches the field, which is unfair. Though he did, you know, kind of politely tell everyone that Grandpa was wrong in saying he's for sure going to be back at Texas, which, AJ, that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it is.
I mean, why would you guarantee he's going to be back? If he's the number one pick, he's the number one pick.
Right. Well, if the Browns had the number one pick, though, then he might stay.
Yeah, I wonder, because they're going to have a list, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, probably they can try to do what they did with Eli. It's harder now to do that. Like, it's not as easy.
He'll have the draft order before he even declares. So, I mean,
yeah, so you'll know. And, like, mm-hmm. and my guess is, like, it'll be the Browns. It'll be the Saints. I actually weirdly don't think it'll be the Colts. I don't think they'll be, like, one of the top three or four, like, one of the worst.
They're always, like, 8-9 or something like that.
Yeah, like, they'll win just enough games to keep them out of, like, the Cade Klubnik and Arch Manning conversation this year. So, I personally feel like it's going to be the Saints, just, like, gut feeling. Like, I mean, that's a team that's 7-plus point dogs. The team's already on the schedule, and the game, not a single game has been played yet. They're the only team left in the NFL that has yet to name a starting quarterback. They're starting Spencer Rattler in their next game. Or it's some kid named Tyler Shuck, who none of us have really ever seen play college football, even though he went to Louisville, I think it was. But they're going to be a mess this year. All right. Well, that will wrap it up for us. If you missed it and you're listening, you're not watching the Astros right now, thank you. If you're watching with the Astros on mute, thank you. But Craig Kimbrell is now a member of the Houston Astros. So that will do it for us. We'll be back with you tomorrow here at 6 o'clock on Last Call on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Reminder, tomorrow is the last day of the summer circuit at El Tiempo Cantina on Washington. Hang out with the Bees and Paul Gallant from 12 to 6. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 6. Thanks for watching or listening. Peace.